I'm Daniel Vitalis of DanielVitalis.com, and you are listening to the Rewild Yourself podcast, a show dedicated to transcending human domestication, activating our invincible genetic health, and uncovering our true potential. In each episode, we explore the many aspects of the rewilding lifestyle for better health, fitness, and a more rich and fulfilling life. Rewild yourself. Engage your biology. Rewild Yourself is brought to you by SirThrival.com. SirThrival is a leading nutritional supplement and metafoods company that supplies essential formulas and ingredients for the rewilding lifestyle. Go to SirThrival.com to find a line of products that promote vigorous health, adaptation, and recovery, and help to unlock our epigenetic potential. SirThrival, why just survive when you could thrive? Are you ready to develop a lifelong rewilding approach you can feel confident about? Are you tired of struggling through endless diet crazes, fitness fads, and constant scientific revisions? If so, join me October 11th through the 16th of 2015 in Rhinebeck, New York for my elementary school program. No, not like the elementary school we were forced through as children. This is about learning to work with the four elements as a foundation for creating and perfecting your personalized rewilding strategy. You'll learn and anchor in seven practices that are crucial to a well-adapted life in the modern world. We'll be exploring movement, sleep, meditation, diet, water, air, sunlight, as well as a myriad of other ideas, tactics, and techniques for evolving your current way of life. This will be an intimate five-day event, yes, that's right, five-day event, on the beautiful campus of the Omega Wellness Center, where you, myself, and a huge community of rewilders, maybe not huge, but, you know, definitely a community of rewilders, will be laying the foundations for lifelong vibrant living. You can go to DanielVitalis.com, click on About, and then on Coming Events to get more details. Welcome back to the Rewild Yourself podcast. Hey, if you're wondering why the show came out a day late this week, it's because we were celebrating the birthday of my amazing assistant, Jessica, who really helps to put the show together as well as helps to put most of my work together that makes its way out to all of you. So big thanks to you, Jesse. Happy birthday. Thanks for everything you do to make this show happen. And just for everybody listening, if it wasn't for this woman behind the scenes, yeah, I don't know, you'd be hearing from me so much. So big thanks to you, Jesse. Hope you had a really good time on your rewilding adventure around the summer solstice. Yeah, so it is the summer solstice, everybody. So happy solstice. And I'm sure that a lot of you have noticed that the longest day of the year and the whole kind of time around the longest day of the year might equate to you being up a bit later and maybe even having a little bit more fun than normally. So we had such a great show a few weeks back with Sean Stevenson talking about sleep. And one of the things that's occurred to me over the years as I've studied sleep more is that there's currently dominating an idea that we're supposed to get really regular amounts of sleep, that we should go to bed at the same time every day, we should wake up at the same time every day, and that our sleep cycle should be really regular. I really think this is going to get overturned at some point. Here's what I mean. We know now that it's like not good to always be in the same temperature, for instance, that you want fluctuation in your temperature. So people keep their houses usually one steady temperature all the time. But of course, in nature, it's getting much hotter in the day, much colder at night. You know, noon to 2-3 in the afternoon is going to be the warmest part of the day usually. And then, of course, from like 2-4 in the morning, it gets pretty cold almost anywhere in the world. Usually much cooler, even in tropical places, even in deserts. So, well, especially in deserts. So it's kind of this idea that your body's not meant to be at one steady temperature all the time, but it's meant to adapt to fluctuations, and we don't want to lose that adaptability, that kind of versatility, that elasticity, if you will. So we want to stay really flexible and plastic in that way. Similarly, we know our heart rhythm shouldn't be steady, one kind of beat all the time, but should be modulating all the time. We want that. We want that change, that adaptability in our heart rate. We find that in a lot of things. So I've just been thinking about the way sleep works in relationship to ambient light. And of course, the summer solstice is the longest day of the year, and that's going to keep people up out later, playing longer, having more fun, because there's light. Think about what it would have been like naturally on this planet prior to electricity. We would have been active in the day, and the day goes much later. You know, here in Canada, where I've been recording the show the last few weeks, you know, there's still ambient light at 10 p.m. I mean, this is
far enough north, and obviously the further north we go, the more of that there is. So what about when it's the full moon nearest to the summer solstice? Now we've got a night that's the brightest night of the month, and we've got the brightest day or the longest day of the year. You combine those together, people are going to be up a lot later. Now what about when it's the new moon and it's the winter solstice? Well, now we're talking the shortest day and the darkest night, and so people are going to be in bed naturally a lot earlier. Things are starting to shut down a lot earlier. So I think that we, you know, this fluctuation is in our sleep cycles normal every month and throughout the year. In other words, as the days grow longer, you're having slightly longer days and shorter sleep cycles. And as the moon moves through its phase, from new moon where you're going to sleep sort of the earliest to full moon where people are up the latest. And what I like to notice about this especially is how people don't necessarily know this is happening, and yet they're still moving in accordance with it. So even though they're not aware of the lunar or solar calendar per se, it's affecting people, and you can see that, and that's really fun to watch. Okay, so that brings me to summer solstice. So brightest day of the year, or I should say longest day of the year, most sun exposure available to us. But what about all of this fear about sun exposure? What about the story of skin cancer? What about skin aging? What about all these problems we're told that the sun causes for us in our skin? And how do we approach the sun in a healthy way? How much sun do we really need? We're going to cover all that in this talk with Nadine Artemis. She is just so knowledgeable on this topic, brings so much clarity to how we can best relate to sun. Because I think a lot of people are confused about that. I think a lot of parents are confused about how much sun exposure to get to their infants and children. I think a lot of grown people are concerned about the longevity of their skin. I think people are concerned about skin cancer. All these things, of course, because we've been told again and again and again. So Nadine's really dug in on this. She's really done the research, and we're going to reveal a lot of that in this show, and I think you're going to have some serious takeaways. I want to really encourage you to participate in my No Tan Line Summer Challenge. In other words, can you get through this entire summer developing a nice, rich tan, a tan that's healthy for your skin, without being marked by the hypopigmentation caused by the pathology of our clothing wear? So can you make it through the summer without being all marked up by tan lines? Can you, and that just means that you've got to get naked in the sun somewhere, somehow. Can you do it? I'm doing it, and lots of other people are doing it, and you can check that out at the hashtag NakedSunTime. All right, that said, there's some good content coming up. Of course, we'll provide all these links in the show notes so that you can just sit back and listen and enjoy Nadine Artemis on the topic of sun and sun exposure. Nadine Artemis is the creator of Living Libations, an exquisite line of serums, elixirs, and essential oils for those seeking the purest of the pure botanical health and beauty products on the planet. She is the author of Holistic Dental Care, The Complete Guide to Healthy Teeth and Gums, a frequent commentator on health and beauty for media outlets, and her products have received rave reviews in the New York Times, the National Post, and the Hollywood Reporter. Described by Alanis Morissette as a true sense visionary, Nadine has formulated a stunning collection of rare and special botanical compounds. Nadine's fresh paradigm for beauty and her natural approach to health presents a revolutionary vision. It allows the life force of flowers, dewdrops, plants, the sun, and water to be the ingredients of healthy living, and lets everything unessential, contrived, and artificial fall away. Nadine, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
People love you, by the way, on the show. We obviously had you on before, and so we get a lot of requests to have you back, so awesome to have you back on. And I wanted to start by just, I think I might have done the exact same thing the last time I had you on, but this week I have had so many people come up to me to say, I love how you smell. And again, I just need to thank you for that. And I even got a text message from somebody I met at an event like 2 years ago. And I hadn't heard from this person in 2 years. She writes me and says, I have to tell you how much I loved the way you smelled. So that is due in large part. I'm sure some of that is me, but a lot of that is you too. So thanks for all the products that you do. And I'm really excited for the upcoming Living Libation Salon happening where I'm at. So yeah. Anyway, thanks for what you do.
Yeah. Oh, my pleasure. I'm so glad it's appreciated.
Yeah, it definitely is. And it is by a huge community of people. Obviously, we have a lot of mutual friends. For people listening, Nadie and I have known each other for a long time. But, it, you know, everywhere I go, your products are there. They're like a fixture in the backdrop of my reality, no matter where I am. So it's that's pretty cool. How's your summer going?
Oh, my God, so good. It is just solstice since yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
But being outside and living in nature, I just feel like, you know, summer starts early. Like, I feel like I have the longest summers ever, because if you get those warm, sunny days in April and May, I just feel like we've caught, you know, I just feel like I'm at the cottage all year round. And of course, we start interacting with the sun as early as possible.
Mm.
So this year we were able to, as you know, our house burnt down in the fire, and we're living in our newly designed house, which we are able to build more in relationship to the elements. So one of the best surprises was that this sweet bedroom we have on the top floor, the sun rises, because the winter it's the sun rises in a different spot, pretty much almost right at south by the time we're at winter solstice. So from bed, with our duvets on, we can open the sliding glass doors and sun gaze in the coziness of our bed in the winter mornings. So I love that, really helps with winter. And then, you know, come, you know, February, March, we're able to, again, open up those sliding doors and lie on our floor and suntan with the wind block,
even while
it's still like
-10
out. I was texting Camille, mutual friend Camille, once, and I was like, oh, I saw that beautiful picture of you, your suntan in your greenhouse, but I was like, you don't want to actually suntan through glass, because you're just getting the UVA and no UVB, and I'm like, we're sunning now and it's great, just get a wind block area. And she's like, how can you do that, it's -10 out. I'm like, I'm sweating right now.
Yeah, exactly. that's a great point, actually. First, let me just say, for those of you on Instagram, check out @livinglibations, because your Instagram feed is gorgeous. You're always posting beautiful pictures from your landscape and flowers and plants where you live. And we see a lot of nice images of the lake there and the sunsets and everything. So people might enjoy that. But let's talk a little bit about that. Obviously, today we were talking about sunlight. That was our goal in getting together. And I've just recently started the hashtag Naked Sun Time, which has been a blast, and encouraging people, challenging people to a no tan line summer. So for me, this thing of seeing tan lines on people, sometimes what I see when I see that is like colonial taboo. It's like, you're not allowed to take your clothes off. And so I'm encouraging people, obviously, not to get arrested, and obviously not to overexpose themselves to sun, but to get, you know, a healthy dose of sunlight with as little clothes on as possible. You just mentioned something I think is really important for people to know, that it's not this, the UVB doesn't pass through glass. And can you explain a little bit about these different types of UV and what we're after, and why glass, things like glass would be an issue?
Yes, for sure. And I just want to say, you remind me, with no tan lines, it sort of also, it seems like where civilization and rewilding meets. It's like, oh, we could almost be wild, but we have to keep the bathing suit
because they'll arrest you.
Yes. So the whole UVA, UVB thing is very key. So it also helps us understand sunscreen. When we just have UVA isolated, that's where we can get, you know, and as we know, like with so many things in life, when we're separating out elements and not working with the whole thing, that's when some things arise, right? Like if you think about, like, you know, the synthesization of drugs, right? Sometimes they're taking one component and isolating it, and they're not including the whole plant.
Almost always.
Pretty much 100% of the time. So when we apply sunscreen, the chemicals absorb into our skin and block the UVB rays. And SPF, which is the sun protection factor, that's the term, I don't know who was created by, maybe the FDA, and that term can only be used for synthetic ingredients. So if we talk about anything even having a slight SPF factor, like a coconut oil or something, just know we can't actually use that term, because it only applies to synthetic ingredients. And when we're applying these SPFs, it's giving us a false sense of security, because it disables our skin's early warning protection, also known as the sunburn. against lengthy hours in the sun. And so what essentially the sunscreen's doing, it's anesthetizing our skin. It's blocking the UVB rays. The UVB is what causes sunburn, yet that's also what's producing our vitamin D. And so the interaction of the sun and our skin is our ancient human form of photosynthesis.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
And it's very important that we get the sunlight in the form of UV rays touching the skin, because it produces these beneficial nutrients, which we'll go into, that our bodies require. And what's really neat too, especially since I'm talking to you today, is that there's a new study that's come out that's suggesting that we went hairless as humans about 2 million years ago. And this hairlessness obviously created our skin can communicate more with the sun, and that this created a pretty fast evolution in the development of our brains.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Do they explain any more on that? I mean, I'm assuming now we're talking about an increase of vitamin D and then the beneficial effects of this. And also, I would think neurotransmission as well, but I'd be curious if they expressed what they think might have been the factor there.
Yeah, I think we'd get more nutrients. What also we're understanding is it, and I mean, the saying that the sun, our relationship to the sun is our human form of photosynthesis. I mean, that may sound like poetic and metaphor, but it is actually a thing.
Yeah, it's real.
No, it's like really happening. And so that's really talking on a cellular level to the mitochondria and to the ATP function, mm-hmm. which is like the heart and soul of the cell. And then that what this is leading to is an understanding that glucose is probably not what's energizing our cells.
Thank
but
you.
This relationship to the sun, which would then go into a huge amount of undoing a lot of cellular biological understanding and even dietary understanding, which we could probably link up to paleo eating as well, because that's more ketogenic and we're not functioning off glucose.
Wow. You know, I got to jump in here and say a couple things.
Yes.
You know, recently we had Gerald Pollack on the show talking about water, and in particular talking about the interaction of water with photon energy and how it actually changes the structure of water. And, you know, he's been doing a lot of work in the lab on this. And we got talking about, you know, the need for photons and the need for electrons. And I think we've been, you know, as a culture stuck a long time in this paradigm as food as fuel. And I think if we're going to use that cheesy kind of car as a body metaphor, it's like, okay, yes, the food is like a fuel in a sense. We burn it for energy. But what runs the battery? That's electrical energy. That's coming off
this.
That's coming from the sun. I mean, we're getting this, our electrical system. So that's why it's like, yeah, try to eat really healthy food, but live in a cave and see how long you know, it's like, and it's interesting is you and I have probably both done a lot of fasting or cleanses, and you really get, that's where you really tune into, oh, I can go a while without food, but the light is what's really crucial, right?
So crucial. And then, yeah, it brings us back to the ancient practice of sun gazing, where, you know, from ancient Greece to ancient Egypt, and there'd be all these cultural benefits from doing that, where people even felt there was a mineralization of the body. And what I also love, sun is really one of my most exciting topics, so I just could probably talk to you for 5 hours on this. But I love studying the, I buy as many old books as I can get my hands on about heliotherapy.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we have there at the turn of the century, 1903, Danish physician Niels Finsen won the Nobel Prize for curing tuberculosis with sunlight therapy, and he started this Light Institute. Then, following in his footsteps, we have medical doctor Auguste Rollier, and he's the most famous heliotherapist, and really news of his healings really came all over the world at that time. And then that brings us up to about the 1920s, and he's opening these clinics in the Alps in Switzerland, where they are, you know, dealing with lupus, tuberculosis, smallpox, wounds, rickets, and they're having miraculous and complete cures. And what he felt is that the deeper the tan, the better the cure.
Mm-hmm. And for people listening, helios means sun. We're talking about sun
therapy. Yes. Oh, yeah. So it's revolving around the sun. And if you look up, like, Auguste Rollier, Rollier, Auguste, Auguste Rollier, Lausanne, Switzerland, and go into Google Images, you'll see these great images of what were these clinics. The kind of, you know, there's kind of a hospital vibe, except it's all out on verandas and all the beds are on the verandas and everybody's really deeply tanned. And Auguste Rollier has like a great tan. And then you're really seeing these like, these pictures of these young children, you know, playing in the snow in these kind of diapers and getting the tan. But then you'll see the before and afters. So you've got these like almost hunchbacked, like bones not forming well, pictures, or these open wounds of tuberculosis, and then the children a year later with these straight backs, beautiful golden skin, and the wounds all healed. And that's really cool to see. And while I got on this, although I'm sure we got into eventually, is just talking about the light and what they found. What was really surprising to the medical community back in the day is that Dr. Rollier's therapy was that if the patients wore sunglasses, the healing was ineffective.
Of course.
Yeah, so sunglasses block out important rays of the light spectrum that the body requires for essential biological functions. And so what's interesting too, though, is that the eyes will receive this nourishment from the light spectrum in the shade, but not with sunglasses. So, you know, sunglasses have their purpose, you know, like sometimes they're good even just as headbands to keep your hair off your face, you know, or driving or whatever.
I keep a pair in my car.
Yeah, driving for sure. But we do need this sunglass free time. And then what's also neat about this practice of sun gazing, and there has been a lot written about it, is that it stimulates our pineal gland and the suprachiasmatic nucleus in the hypothalamus, which then synchronizes hormonal body rhythms. And I think that's pretty major too, because we've got a whole, you know, we all function, well, we don't all, but, you know, generally society functions with alarm clocks. Mm-hmm. And we're very distant from our circadian rhythms and, you know, what's in the glory of the morning when the crickets are stirred into songs, and we're forgetting about this innateness and really the information that, mm-hmm, if we allow, we can always be receiving from the cosmos.
Okay, I gotta pause you there. Wow.
Yes.
So much there. So much there. You're amazing. Okay. I want to go back to the you said a hospital vibe that they had, and it just triggered, yes, me thinking about hospitals. And one thing that's always been amusing to me is that hospitals are supposed to be a place of healing, but they have none of the four elements present. It's always interesting.
Yes.
And to me, with this MRSA problem, right, these staph infections that are resistant to antibiotics, it's like, just take the frickin' roof off the building and we'll be good. Because sunlight destroys pathogens. It's like when you're when you're purifying water. There's a survival technique of purifying water in the sun, and it's often done, and I don't like this for other reasons, but you do it in a plastic bottle. So if you have water you know is biologically contaminated, and you put it in a clear plastic bottle in the sun for a day, that UV will kind of scramble the DNA of those organisms, and they won't be able to reproduce. Now, you'd think, well, I'll do it in a glass bottle, but like you said, the glass blocks that. So that's why it's got to be done in plastic. So I don't love that idea, and I don't like drinking water with photodegraded plastic.
What about an open bowl?
Exactly. And then it's just touching the bowl. How about how about one of those quartz singing bowls? No, so I'm on the same page with you, but it illustrates that point. And for me, it's just amazing that there are sick people who are sick with pathogenic organisms, and they're not being put out in the sun. I mean, this is just insane, actually. And this has been known for a long time.
Oh, we can go to a juicy part on that. I got around that.
All right, so please do. Yeah, no, let's go there. Do it.
And back to hospitals. Florence Nightingale was actually working with architects to design hospitals that had huge amounts of glass in them, because they did find in the areas with windows there was way less germs.
Mm. Oh, wait, before you go, before you go.
Yes, yeah. I'm not going anywhere.
So, all right. stay right here.
We go to the next subject.
Before we go to the next subject, I just want to say, with sunglasses, just like high heel shoes, just like bras, just like belts, like all these things, they're tools, they have a place, but
this idea that we're going to wear these things all the time, all day long, morning till night. I think
yeah.
it's really important that we, you know, I got a real beef with high heel shoes, and part of it, of course, because you know
oh
me, I'm not a very tall guy, so maybe that's part of it. But but you know, I really think high heel shoes
yeah.
are like kind of to me, what I see is Chinese foot binding.
Oh yeah, exactly. It's this. I have not worn a high heel shoe since like maybe my grade 13, you know, high school prom, and that was I feel like you got to be able to move. They feel like torture devices.
Exactly,
I'm like, you have to be able to walk.
And there's a great story from the World Trade Center when those explosions happened about how littered the stairwells were in high heel shoes, as the women had to jettison them to get out of the building because they couldn't walk in them, right? But anyway, so my point is, I later came. Certain circles that I was in, I started to see, oh, maybe there's a place for these shoes. I think that place is in a bedroom, but regardless, I understand that there's... When you're not walking, yeah. But so the point is, I do see a use for these. Like, I was in Mexico recently, and there were some days where I wore sunglasses because I just was not acclimated to the amount of sun I was getting. I mean, it just was... I couldn't keep my eyes open. But I was trying to be really sparing with it, you know, or driving. So I just want to say for people out there, yeah, you know, I'm not saying these things, we need to create a dogma around this, but I think it's really wise that we're sparing, you know, sparing with them. Okay.
Yeah.
Carry
absolutely.
On. So we were at Florence Nightingale and less microbes in the
hospitals. Yeah. And like, if we're just thinking about like design and bodies, like in ancient Greece, they had the gymnasiums. They were actually all like without ceiling, so they're exposed to the sunlight, because the Olympic athletes were actually required to work out in the sun because it actually develops muscle.
Doesn't gymnasium mean something about being naked? I believe that the root of that word
that
is about being naked.
I
think they were just wearing olive
tidbit.
Oil.
Yeah. Well, it's my favorite way to work out is lying
exactly.
in the sun.
Oh my gosh. I so agree. Yeah. Say lately every morning, you know, it's been really sunny up here in Quebec where I am. And every morning I get out of bed and it's just, I go straight downstairs outside onto the deck and just, sometimes I'll fall back asleep, have another dream cycle naked in the sun. But I'm just trying to maximize that. And then, of course, my workouts and exercise as well. So
yeah, perfect. So what we're talking about is like this disease and how the sunlight, helps with bacteria. I mean, like hanging your laundry in the sunlight, that all these things help with, a deeper type of clean. And so, you know, we all know about in external environments that sunlight can be a germicide and bactericide. Internally, the skin's secretions catalyzed by sunbeams. So when we're catalyzing our skin with these sunbeams, it's a powerful broad-spectrum antibacterial and immune-regenerating substance. So we have vitamin D receptors in every crevice of our body, including areas where the sun doesn't shine. And so when we look at that, so when I was preparing research, I feel like everything goes back to the microbiome. So I wanted to, you know, including for all my sort of tips to interact with the skin wisely, I always just felt like including probiotics in there. But I was like, I wanted to back up what I was saying, but I just felt like that's what I wanted to say. It's probiotics, sunshine, microbiome, what's the connection? And I was so happy to find this study. And that's what I was getting excited about. And it really also shows why we can't just rely on a vitamin D supplements. When we have empty vitamin D receptors, also known as VDRs, and they're all over our body, and if they're not filled with the sun's rays, with these juicy sun secretions, what happens to these empty vitamin D receptors? And what's the role and how do they interact with gut bacteria? Because I do find like lack of intestinal integrity, you know, there's going to be a relationship with the sun. So when our vitamin D receptors are brimming with the sunshine vitamin, this prevents the gene expression of a mind-boggling array of disease-causing genes. When our vitamin D receptors are not bound with vitamin D, when they're not filled with this active D3, bacterial lingons, which are this sort of a sticky bacterial adhesion, they go in and stick to these empty vitamin D receptors.
Ugh.
They bind, and then they inactivate the vitamin D receptor.
Ugh.
And then that inactivates our innate immune system. And I think of it like a basically, you know, think of like burglars in a building, and all they would have to do is just go to the alarm switch and just turn it off, and then they can just walk right in. It just really sets up an easy collapse of our immune system. And then what happens when we don't have the vitamin D receptors active, then we can't produce antimicrobial peptides. So then this allows the microbes to proliferate, set up shop, and create a whole environment for chronic inflammatory diseases, which also explains the over 2,500 studies that are showing vitamin D is like preventing a major amount of diseases. And so when the vitamin D receptors are disabled, we have a huge number of issues. And then this growing number of bacteria, they downregulate our immune system, and then we can get things like it creates the Mycobacterium tuberculosis and Epstein-Barr virus. Mm. And so then I find that neat, because now we have like the scientific studies that are showing why Dr. Auguste Rollier's work was able to cure tuberculosis with the sun. And then, you know what I mean? So this whole thing of like the vitamin D, in the immune system is just so connected.
I'm getting this. The imagery I was getting was like sort of Lord of the Rings kind of a thing, where it's like in the dark is where you get these like trolls and orcs and goblins that are like festering and bubbling and rotting, and they don't want to step into the light. They want to be in the shadow, you know? And it's like in the darkness out of the sun is where we start to literally, because we're children of the sun, like you said before. I mean, I think this kind of this line of thinking that there's some interaction with why we doffed our mammalian fur and the sun. You know, we are as a species children of the sun. So it's, of course it makes sense, just from like the basic heart-centered perspective. It's like, of course it makes sense that if we are not getting enough sunlight, we start to rot away, or the earth starts to reclaim us, or we get composted back into soil. Of course, right? That makes so much sense. We're not meant to be troglodytes. We're meant to be in the sun. So it's interesting. And then, you know, I just love the metaphor too, that things that are wicked, things that are dark, they linger in shadow. And they don't ever want to be brought into the light. And these things that are going to take us down and compost us, if we just bring them into the light, they have to scatter, right? That's just a neat metaphor.
Yeah, I love that. Totally. And I think you may remind me of, just if you think of it, areas of the forest that get like no sunlight. Mm-hmm. There's no green, there's dampness.
Yeah, mold, mildew, and fungus.
Yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of what we're talking about here is going to be true for fungal conditions as well, right? Because we've been talking about bacteria and viruses, but mycologically as well. I mean, a lot of fungus, obviously, it's not like you see, very rarely do you see mushrooms growing out in broad sunlight, right? They grow in wet, shadowy, dark areas. And so when the fungi is in us as well, it's like the sun is also good for those as well. So we've got mycoprotection, bacterial protection, viral protection, all these things from the sun, right?
Totally.
Cool. What else?
I think it's good to talk about, like, so what we have right now is we've, you know, huge media. I always joke that the sun needs a new PR agency.
Yeah, right? Totally.
Because we're debate, you know, it's a huge debate from the dermatologists and quote-unquote beauty magazines about, you know, the sun damage, if it's good or bad. And I feel like we have to remember that we are in relationship to everything. So it's not something doing something to us. We're in relationship with the sun. So we have to think about, what do we offer these rays, remembering it takes two to tango. And I really feel that the crux of our current crisis, we see a lot that the sun is promoted as the culprit of skin carcinomas, mutating moles, wrinkles, and melanomas, versus the sun as the giver of this of sun. And there's a lot of scientific data now showing that the sun's a major contributor to the prevention of cancer. Like, for example, Dr. Garland shows that with adequate amounts of vitamin D in our body, our risk for breast cancer is reduced by a whopping 50%. And that can't be dismissed.
So we've significant.
So it's huge. So we've got this thing of like, it makes cancer. It's taking away cancer. And so a lot of people think, well, you know, I don't think there's such a thing as a healthy tan. I'll just wear sunscreen and take vitamin D supplements. And so we should really, I think we should unpack that too, because I feel like people might be like, yeah, I hear you that the sun's good, but there's a lot of programming going the other way. And I feel like, you know, and then people are just worried about aging and wrinkles and, you know, that kind of thing.
So we have, so we have a couple things there. Yeah. Cause we have the, have the concerns about, aging and wrinkling, which is, one very legitimate concern, but not so much a health concern as much as more of a cosmetic one. And then of course we have the more, the health concern about skin cancer. And I think, both of these things we should unpack. And I want to say that when I started the, Naked Sun Time hashtag, and the No Tan Line Challenge, it was, that was one of the things that I would hear from people. I'd hear mostly like, oh my God, this is so exciting, it's so freeing, I want to be naked in the sun. And then that would be punctuated by, and I'm concerned about this. And did Garland write the UV Advantage? Is that who you're talking about?
I don't know if he wrote that, but he's done a lot of studies. He might have written
No, I might be mixing with someone else. So there's the book, The UV Advantage. And in it, you know, when I got exposed to this when I was a lot younger, and I really made me feel safer because I lifeguarded at the beach for 5 years and got tremendous amounts of sun exposure. And I want to say I did not ever in 5 summers of lifeguarding ever use sunscreen. And the people that I worked with thought I was out of my mind. They just thought I was crazy. And I would watch all of them burn and blister and peel. And I had such a deep base tan. And one thing that's been interesting is I think that changed my genetic expression at some level, like epigenetically, because I maintain a strong base tan and I get tan really easy now, and always have since then. But okay, so anyway, these are important, and I guess, but what I wanted to say about the UV Advantage was that in that book, he had given tables, like, if this is your skin type, this is the amount of noonday sun that's healthy for you, and he kind of broke that down, and so I've always known, okay, I can handle a lot, but how do people know how much sun exposure is healthy for them, safe for them? And I think for a lot of people, it's not just them, they're even more concerned about their children, so maybe from infant age and up, how do we know?
Yeah, that's a great question. I do, we'll link up to an article I wrote on interacting wisely with the sun, which just gives some great tips, and we'll go over that too. There's also an app for that called D-Minder, and you'll plug in your longitude, latitude, date, and it will tell you, and I think skin type, on how, like what you need right now and how much will give you X amount of, you know, units of vitamin D. So I think that's a really good app to get you sort of trained. But I also advise to always, you start slowly but surely and start in the spring if possible. But you can start today as well, even though we're into summer. And you're, you know, tanning in the morning up until about solar noon, which could be 1 o'clock in your area.
Oh, thank you for being wise enough to make that distinction.
Yeah.
So many people are like, don't really know that there's another form of time that's much more ancient than civil time. But that is when the sun is directly high overhead, directly south, for people who are not familiar. And it's technically when the sun crosses the meridian, which is why AM is anti-meridian in meridian, and PM is post-meridian.
Oh, didn't know that one. I didn't have no idea what AM and PM meant. Good one. And so at the clinics in Switzerland, for example, they might be like, okay, like exposing your feet and ankles for 5 minutes a day. Like depending, I mean, if you're like redheaded, never been in the sun for 30 years, this would be how you start, you know, and then you're 5 minutes for like, you know, and you build that up for a week and then you keep, you know, like then it's up to the knees and then you're adding and like, it's literally going that slowly but surely. And, you know, don't forget a flip. And then there's also the sides of the body. Sometimes they might need more. And I always say, like, you know, if you're that concerned about, well, we'll go into wrinkles and hyperpigmentation more, but just, you know, put a hat on for your head and like tan your whole back of body. I mean, you know, that's a great place to start. And just so you can sort of see the difference. And I always, kids are a bit different. Because they don't actually, generally speaking, they're not like sitting there lying in the sun. And that'd be fun. I mean, Leaf's sort of at that stage now. I can get a bit of time out with them. But generally, it's like this walking around exposure. And so really, the main concern is like the noses, the, you know, the cheeks and maybe tops of shoulder, that kind of thing. It's like where the sun's hitting differently. And I feel like the rest of the body can just be fine. I mean, I've never used sunblock on Leaf, and he's fine. Like, and it's, you know, even the first day he was born, we had, or like a couple days later, because, you know, when they're forming their belly button,
mm-hmm.
and they just said, the midwives were like, keep it clean. I'm like, okay. So we put like a drop of tea tree on there and then put them in the sun for just, they're so tiny when they're born. Cute. And just like a couple minutes in the sun. And they came back the next day and they're like, oh my God, it's already all formed. How did you do that? We've never seen that before. I'm like, well, you said keep it clean. So,
did Leaf just had his birthday?
Yeah, he just had his birthday.
Cute. I heard from Maya a little bit about it. So infants then. So this is another concern I see for people is like, and of course, you know, you look at infant skin and it's so delicate and so fine. And there's, you can see those capillary beds right at the surface. Like, it always occurs to me that it is important that they get sun exposure. And to me, it's like, I wish my mom had known this and my base tan had started the day I was born, you know, and been carried on forever.
Totally.
So how do we do that? And then I think also it's important that we get really clear here. I mean, the main thing we are avoiding is not some certain amount of sun exposure as much as a sunburn, right? That is the big no-no.
That's a big thing, and we're going to go deeply into that. Can set some records straight. Again, just expose the kids slowly but surely. And if you're pregnant, my gosh, you get out in the sun every day. It should be a practice. The sufficient vitamin D levels in pregnant women will prevent your child from having things like MS when they're 40 and juvenile diabetes. So sun exposure during pregnancy is very, very important, and there's a lot, those are all based on studies showing that. So go into that.
Could I add to that and just say,
yes,
then it occurs to me as you say that for a woman who's carrying the baby, her baby, through the winter time, that it's really important.
Yes.
She's gotten sufficient vitamin D stored up in her liver, and I would assume some supplementation as well, so that if it's a time of year where she can't get that sun exposure, that she's still maintaining that adequate vitamin D levels. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you can, maybe a little bit of a trip to warm weather. Mm-hmm. We are like solar panels, though, so we will. You know, if you've really gone into it this summer, that's what I have noticed, like the past two summers where I really was more, I've been into the sun and tanning for the past, you know, like two decades, but really, really like focusing on it more like a science experiment in the past two summers. And so I'm really noticing with a more of an effort, like getting that consistent exposure, that my winters are different.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't get away too, it's like looking maybe at like fermented cod liver oils and different oils that have that natural vitamin D levels. And we can discuss too the difference between a supplement D and what's created with our skin and the sun, because there's a huge difference.
Okay, so before we do that, if I just want to make sure you were able to finish the thought you had before, because I keep jumping in on you. We were talking about infants, get them started early. You were talking about pregnant women. Now's a great time to go into supplementation if it's not cutting you off.
Yeah, sure, we can do that. Oh my God, see, there's so many things. We'll talk about what to be wearing in the sun. Oh, so many things. Okay, so, you know, and this is largely thankful, knowing sort of the difference with the vitamin D, I would say, is really thanks to Dr. Seneff, Stephanie Seneff, and I'm hoping I'm saying her name correctly. And on Mercola's site, he has a lot of her interviews, and her work is amazing, and she's even, you know, connecting glyphosate consumption with inhibiting vitamin D production in the body. So I love where
and
she takes it.
That's Monsanto's Roundup you're talking about there, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, yes.
Did we say the M word?
Their phone call. So I want us to really understand that the sun is this cosmic catalyst, and it's really talking to us on a cellular level, and that really to understand, forget everything the media talks about, but our skin is designed to be exposed to the sun's rays. There's this energy exchange with solar ethers that only happens with our skin and the sun. And this union is key, and it offers so much nourishment. And that's why, you know, it's like we also, I mean, most people feel really happy in the sun, right? And we're like, oh, it feels so good. Mm. So And it's feeding our vitality, our cell energy, our immune system, the marrow of our bones, and it's cleaning our blood. Like, it helps with like high blood pressure. And so this is like a catalytic meeting when the skin and the sun meet, and it should be ongoing. And it's something that we want to have a continual engagement with so we can reignite our life force again and again. And so when our skin meets the rays, our skin is literally opening up to receive the light. Like the pores will dilate almost like a cervix. Like the skin's dilating, and it's dilating not just on the surface, but also in the layers below the epidermis to receive this like sun prana. And then we're producing melanin, and then that's lubricating us inside, because it's actually, even though it's named vitamin D, it's actually this hormone that's created when our skin and sun are meeting. It's vitamin D is actually a hormone. It's not a vitamin, but we're just going to call it vitamin D because that's what we've all agreed on. So our skin is converting the sunbeams, and that's sort of this photosynthesis part, and it's making regenerative substances of melanin, sulfur, the steroidal hormone. And so it's like this, I think of it as like an internal sun fluid lube. So just sort of my made up name.
I love
and it's influencing every single cell of our body. And when it courses through our blood, it actually helps so many body functions, including, so this is where we think of it. There's sun, we've got this programming of sun damage, but what actually happens is organs get repaired. We're boosting our immune. We're lowering insulin. We're lowering blood pressure. We're boosting neuromuscular functioning, and it's interacting with over 2,000 genes. And so it's pretty key.
You'd and almost get the impression, you'd almost have the impression that the media and the powers that be would almost want people sick and suffering. But of course
crazy.
Not. Of course
Although
not.
I don't think there's that much intelligence behind it.
I know.
I think somebody's just like, hey, we can make this product.
Yeah.
I think it's more about the sale of like a
sunblock. I know. It's just like, it's got this overarching Eye of Sauron kind of evil feel to it when you're like, it's just amazing. Like the idea that you could convince human beings that the sun, which we know is the source of like all of the energy on the planet, and it's the source of like, it's the source of life. And yet, you know, we could be convinced to hide from it. It's like, how did that happen? It's amazing.
Yeah. That we've literally like, oh, the source of all life is bad. And so I just feel like, yeah, we're cowering.
That's a rugged fundamental belief.
In the song that Ron and I wrote about the sun, you know, we talk about how we're afraid, you know, to walk from the parking lot to the mall. Like literally, like so many women are programmed and they're not even outside all day. But if they have to run an errand, that they need sunblock. And I'm like, wow.
Oh, like vampires.
You know, just wow. Yes.
Like Nosferatu. So going back, you were saying about it being a hormone, and I just wanted to say there's definitely rumblings of that getting changed at some point. I know that's going to be difficult for everybody, but I hear that a lot. And there's this other piece that I want to make sure gets covered, is that that vitamin D is made on the skin surface there, but it can actually be washed away, can't it?
Yeah, that's true too. So we need to – well, you can – it's in, or you can engage with water. Like you can jump in the lake and have a bath or a shower in normal water, not like municipal tap water, because the chemicals will change that. It takes about 24 hours to get, I guess, all the communication going in the body. So you're producing 24 hours later from your time in the sun. It's like all interacting. So soap and chemicals will harm that production. So you want to avoid that. And then where Dr. Seneff's work is going is she's talking about the sulfur, this beneficial sulfur that's created, which is an essential mineral. We get from this engagement of our skin and the sun, we get cholesterol sulfate and vitamin D3 sulfate, which are essential for like amazing health. And so this healthy cholesterol and sulfur protect our DNA, and they actually act as antioxidants that take the heat of the solar rays. Whereas vitamin D3 from oral supplements is unsulfured and fat soluble, which is helpful, but it doesn't bond to the sulfur in our body and make vitamin D3 sulfate. So we definitely need that interaction with the sun, because then we're getting a water soluble vitamin D in our body, and then that's able to move freely through the bloodstream and help to purify the blood and make this healthy barrier against bacteria.
Now, is that true of, as well? You had mentioned before about foods, and I think when we're talking about vitamin D in foods, I think liver is probably the place where we're going to find the most of this
of
the time.
Yeah.
But when we're talking about this animal form in a liver, or the oils from a liver, is that true as well, or is this something that's true more of synthetic vitamin D supplements?
Well, the processed vitamin D is from a linalool of a, like, they usually get it from a sheep. Like sheep linalool,
okay,
hopefully.
I mean,
wait, lanolin. I'm saying the linalool is another plant.
Okay,
component.
So it's coming from lanolin.
Sorry, so
from
I meant lanolin. Lanolin.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
So you know, we can get that natural source, which is kind of like a food supplement thing. But what's really interesting too is that all of the, what do you call that? Processed food, like the fake food thing. It's all made
that, <stuff. laughs>
that whole system. That's actually all D2.
Yep, right.
And so it doesn't fill our vitamin D receptors in the same way.
And it asks our body then has to kind of go through a process of trying to convert some of that over, right? There's a kidney process, I think there's a liver process before any of that can be useful to us in our bodies.
And then with sort of, you know, not working about that too is, again, you still don't have this, like, the vitamin D receptors, like, brimming with the sunshine mm-hmm. thing. So, again, we're very much, like undernourished. But what I also find interesting too is our skin, you know, the sun hasn't changed, but it's, again, if we think about our relationship to the sun and what we're offering the sun, it's like our diets have changed, obviously, mm-hmm. greatly. And I feel like our food system now is really grown in the shadows of factory farming and pesticides.
Yep, shadows.
So we got these shadow foods, right? And
right.
we all know that you can't get any K2. Like, I feel like we're all beginning to understand we have a massive cultural vitamin D3 deficiency. Mm-hmm. And what we're also going to understand is that its vitamin partner, so to speak, it's like fat soluble friend, vitamin K2, I think we're going to understand that we have a massive, epidemic and a deficiency of that, because
but
it only
like
comes...
But I don't like
natto. I know, you don't have to. It's like anything grass-fed that's your ghee, for example, their mm-hmm. survival ghee is like filled with vitamin K. So right. vitamin K2 is only produced in eggs, cheese, meat, butter, like all those products from animals that have eaten the grass, because it's another thing that's created through photosynthesis. And also what's also they're finding out with a healthy microbiome.
Yes.
It will also produce K2. So what we're just
right.
on the tip of understanding is that actually the microbiome will produce things even like vitamin C.
Wow.
But that's a whole other topic.
Yeah, it's a whole other topic.
So if we've got even like everybody in North America is eating milk and eggs, you know, generally speaking, that's all from factory farmed animals with zero K2 in that.
I'm up in Quebec right now, and there's not a good grass-fed butter culture that I've been able to tap into here. So I'm used to, in Maine where I live, I actually travel to New Hampshire, and I get really nice pounds of grass-fed Jersey butter there that are egg yolk golden. And up here, all the butter that I've seen, and there's organic butter and such, but I mean, it is almost pure white. And it's like,
that's weird.
Yeah, but it's missing all of these, you know, because it's organic, but it's organic grain fed. So it's not I can tell this animal's not seen grass in its life, or it's, you know, you eat grass, it turns your fat that color. You get vitamin A, right? It's like beta carotene.
Yeah.
So anyway, I noticed that's missing in a lot of people's diets, even though they're eating organic. That's, you know, for people listening, that's why this grass-fed thing, why these small-scale farms are so important, because you're getting the real deal. You're getting the stuff that Dr. Weston Price talked a lot about, these fat-soluble nutrients.
Yeah. Yeah, so key. Yeah, we have to keep going. You get to organic, and you have to keep going.
Yeah, it's a spectrum.
So if we think about other things, so the other thing too is like pesticides. I was looking, because I was like, they're like a basically kind of like plant sunscreen.
Ooh.
And they're affecting the photosynthesis of the plant.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So then all those vegetables don't have, besides the soil issues, that's also another reason why the pesticide produce doesn't have the same vitamin contact because it's not allowing that fuller development with this plant's relationship to the sun.
Oh.
And then on top of all this, I sort of think of that, of our bodies on this altar of sunshine, definitely what we ingest determines how our skin responds to sunlight.
And, yeah, you know, there's this thing, yeah. I just want to just say that you were talking before about how the sunlight cleans the blood, and one thing that occurs to me, when you have a sunburn, and I think, I'm sure you know this, but for people listening, when you have a sunburn, it's not, you're not red because you're burned, you're red because there's blood in your skin, and that's why when you touch the sunburn, you push that blood away, and you get, for temporarily, the skin goes that kind of whitish color, and then it fills back in, and you're seeing the capillary refill. So all this blood is at the surface of the skin. Well, obviously, this process you've been talking about the pores opening, the skin is this massive organ. Blood is filling and moving through the skin, and it's being treated by the UV. So there's like a, almost like a dialysis is happening in the surface of the skin. And it also makes sense then that if we're eating antioxidant color pigments, those are being brought to the skin as well, and they start to function like a sunblock that's just beneath the surface of the skin, right? Because it's in the blood.
Yeah, it's a pigment, and the melanin's a pigment. So there's this full connection, and again, studies have been done that showing, like, rainbow-rich foods absolutely act like an internal sunscreen. And so once again, generally speaking, there's, like, you know, all the majority of food are, like, devoid of color, again, within the normal world out there. So, you know, we have to – and then also a new study just done on chlorophyll. Chlorophyll. So the more chlorophyll we have in our blood or in our bodies, then we're even amplifying our sun time even better. So when we have a chlorophyll, because then we're able to capture specific wavelengths of sunlight that translate to an increased energy with the mitochondria. So when we have chlorophyll metabolites in our body, then we're able to retain the ability to absorb light in the visible spectrum at wavelengths that can penetrate deeper into our bodies, which is really cool. And that's like a study that was done in 2007. And there's another study called Light Harvesting Chlorophyll Pigments Enable Mammalian Mitochondria to Capture Photonic Energy and Produce ATP. If you copy all that down, or that's in the Journal of Cell
Science.
That's
awesome. Oh, I love that title. It's like, that's great. Okay, I'm gonna memorize that. So where we're at here is that sun good, no sun really, really bad. I mean, that's our base level there. The whole body starts coming unglued, right? All the systems start dissociating. All the organ systems start losing their ability to communicate. The body starts to get overrun by pathogens. Our microbiome is thrown askew. Our hormonal systems start falling apart. Our bones start to demineralize, right? All these things. I mean, literally, the body starts to decompose. If you think of the word composition as things being brought together harmoniously. So we start to decompose without enough sun. So we know we need the sun. One issue that we have is that people who were adapted biologically in the past, ancestrally, to extreme sun have much more melanin, and people who lived in areas with the least amount of sun and the most overcast skies have the fairest skin. I use that word fairest because I think it's nicer sounding than pale. And so the challenge is that you have people, let's say, from Ireland living in South Africa, and you have people from South Africa living in Maine, and you have all this. We've moved all around the planet, and a lot of people haven't given thought to, hey, because if you're very dark skinned, let's say you have a lot of melanin, it's almost like you have sunglasses on in your skin, right? It's designed in such a way.
And we're a sunphobic culture, so there, you know, you might be getting less sun, and you might actually need more because you have more melanin. So your exposure times need to be longer, and we just don't have a lifestyle that's set up for people to really be engaging with the sun.
Exactly. And if you're from Ireland, let's say, and you have that sort of reddish hair and that really fair skin, you might have no problem spending a day outside, the summer outside in Ireland. But if you move to a place like Florida, you're going to get torched because your body is just not really able to adapt quickly enough. And so So I think that's an important part for people to understand when we're talking about, because it's almost like easy to imagine everything's just homogenous, but every latitude has different sunlight. Obviously, the skies and the cloud cover and humidity is a factor. And then where your people come from is a factor. And I think all that needs to be taken into account. But let's say we get that piece. You had mentioned before about what we wear in the sun. And let's talk a little bit about the cosmetic concerns as well.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, let's go right into the cosmetic. And again, I think with all the skin types, just to remind people about the vitamin D app, I think once you've got your base going, you can be, you know, relax a little bit. But if you really want to get back into the sun, the D-Minder app is really good. I have a quote here that I'd love to read to talk about the skin stuff. And it's from a 1929 book, and it's called Sunlight and Health. And I love this, because sunning was really in then. Even the designer Mademoiselle Coco Chanel said, like, the best accessory to an outfit is a good tan. And you will not get that in a fashion magazine right now.
No.
So it said, it was written that properly aired and sunlit skin becomes velvety, supple tissue, absolutely immune from anything of the nature of pimples, acne, and incapable of infection. Sunshine is the finest cosmetic. Skin, well pigmented in response to sunbathing, becomes firm and strong, but at the same time delicate and soft, followed out by a filling out of the exposed skin and a smoothing away of wrinkles results from sunbathing. Increased beauty is the outcome. So that is obviously what everybody wants for their skin. But now, right now, in this century, fillers are injected into faces. We've got chemicals applied to things like acne, eczema, and tans are sprayed on with dihydroxyacetone, all while we avoid the sun.
Yeah, and I figured out when I was younger, I remember as a teenager, maybe I was about 18, 19, I started to really figure out, like, if I got a pimple, I would just go lay in the sun. And, you know, and I would notice two things. One, it would make blemishes like that go away and they would recede back really quickly. But also, when you see somebody who's had a lot of those kind of blemishes and their skin is all these different colors, because some areas are pink where they're just healing and some areas are more white from scarring and some, you know, and you go out in the sun and then all that evens out and you get like that nice, even kind of tonicity to your skin. So that was something that I dialed in early in. It seems obvious to me now, but maybe I forget the people that maybe don't realize that the sun makes your skin look really healthy. It's so obvious.
Well, I think it would be confusing now for a teen too, because they're like, oh, or maybe they would have sort of picked on that up intuitively, but then they're getting these other mixed messages.
Right.
I mean, I'm just thinking of teen acne, but obviously all kinds of people get acne. So
or eczema,
that's
or psoriasis.
Huge, dichotomy in our thing. And I just think of like all the chemicals that we have in our body, and then we're lying in the sun. So on one level, you know what, if you're, you know, going to McDonald's and all that kind of stuff, maybe you shouldn't be lying in the sun, because maybe there's going to be a chemical reaction that we don't know about. So hyperpigmentation is a huge issue. You know, we get emails about it every day, because it's obviously it's when there's a part of the skin that goes to a deeper hue, and it can happen. Well, it happens generally on the face, and that obviously women don't want that. And I wrote an article on that, so it's on our website, about hyperpigmentation. But when we're talking about that in relationship to the sun, because it's very common that it's, you know, a beauty magazine or dermatologist would be like, that's coming from sun exposure. But actually, the hugest creator of the hyperpigmentation is things like the pill, those chemicals, those hormone pills, and polyunsaturated fatty acids.
You're oxidizing the fat out of your skin with the sunlight.
Yeah, they sure are.
Yeah, it's like these are oils that are meant to be kept out of the sun.
Well, right? And they're just, we're not supposed to have canola and azola.
Exactly.
Corn, soy, cotton.
And these oils, like, these are the oils that if they get exposed to sunlight, they break down really, really rapidly and oxidize. So it's, that's something I've always thought, like, what's happening when you're pouring these into your body and into your blood, and then you're laying out in the sun? I mean, okay, so now we know that it's actually not that the healthy body interacting with the sun that causes this hyperpigmentation, but this is typically an interaction of some kind of drug or chemical and the skin and the sun.
Yes, good word. And there's a study on that mice that were not fed any polyunsaturated fatty acids did not develop any skin cancers, and that mice that were fed a diet of 20% polyunsaturated fatty acids, which is pretty, that is our, again, if you're a normal person, you are intaking about 20%. Yeah, exactly. And they developed skin cancer.
Oof, man, there's so many things we have blamed on foods that we've had our whole, you know, a species' whole existence, that we're going to, eventually people are going to realize, oh, okay, like heart disease, okay, we've been looking at the wrong oils here, you know, skin cancer, we've been looking at the wrong place. Like this thing of eating vegetable oil, and if you're thinking, you know, oh, I don't eat vegetable oil, it's like, go into Whole Foods and read the ingredients of every product in the deli, and you're going to find, even there, you're going to see it, right? Everything fried is done in canola. You go to a restaurant, they're using canola. These oils are, not only are they in everything, they're almost always genetically modified ingredients too. So, I mean, these oils are culprits that have somehow slipped through the cracks for a long time here. It's nice to hear that everybody else is getting kind of turned on to this finally now too, and like that it's not just, because I was really aware of it in heart disease. I didn't realize kind of the connection with skin cancer the way you're just talking about now.
Yeah, and just plain old, like, looking good, like, it, the, you know, the wrinkles it causes, you know, I think it was the Los Angeles Plastic Surgery Institute, they did a survey, and basically the women that were eating high polyunsaturated fatty acids looked about, on average, 20 years older than they needed to be. Gross.
Oh, praise the saturated fats. Oh, goodness. Okay, so so a big part of this, now that I guess what's an interesting distinction to make here then is there's a piece of, it's not just about getting the more sun, but it's also dropping away some of the things that can make the sun more damaging or appear to be more damaging. So there's this piece of, obviously, and I think most of the people listening to the show are pretty hip to this. It's like, we get away from these processed foods, we get away from these processed oils, we get away from synthetic drugs, we get away from hormone therapies, which include birth control, and we get onto cleaner, more natural foods. I like that you brought up kind of more ketonic kind of ideas and getting more of these fats into our diet, get off this glycation cycle a little bit, and get this healthy sun exposure. And of course, we combine that with exposure to the other elements. I think of the sun as the fire element, so it's like we need that good clean water element, we need the fresh air element, we need access to the earth. So it's just so cool how it turns out, like, oh, it's just this really easy paradigm: earth, water, air, fire. It's like,
yeah, it all goes back to that. Sure, just keep going back to the elements. Yeah, and if you want to we can unpack the skin cancers and sunscreen stuff, because that
Yeah, That's let's do that. And we're almost at an hour here, and I feel like this might have to turn into a multi-part thing here. There's a lot here, isn't there? Or you've done a lot of research, haven't you? So let's unpack that for a few minutes.
I like to, like, ground it in, you know? Yeah, so it's not you've just done a like, great hey, job. Everybody go in the sun.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's impressive, the amount of research. It's impressive. So tell us a little bit about, let's unpack the skin cancer thing, because I think that's people's biggest fear. And that's the fear, that's the carrot being dangled for people. It's like, you know, I think a lot of people know that, oh, this doesn't make sense, the sun's bad, but they're much more afraid of skin cancer than they are about wanting a tan sometimes.
Yeah, for sure. So there's about, you know, there's three general main types of skin cancer, and they can get little offshoots and branches, but, you know, there's the very serious and ever-increasing malignant melanoma. And that's cancer of the pigment cells, which is really interesting. And that can infiltrate the lymph system, spread aggressively, and be fatal.
Ah, then melanoma. So, yeah, that means cancer of the skin pigment. Yeah, okay, I didn't gather that before. Okay, now it makes sense why it's called that.
And then there's squamous cell carcinoma and basal cell carcinoma, and those are non-melanomas. And that'll be like your doctor's like, oh, you have the basal cell carcinoma, we'll dig it out, and they're like, but you don't, you know, they have like a type of skin cancer, but it's not malignant, so it's like, you're okay.
Scrape
and
it
then
off.
They'll say, just we'll scrape it off, and then don't be in the sun again. And that's, so that's the most common, and it's the least dangerous, and it does not have a tendency to spread. So, you know, it's obviously true that, and we've all probably experienced it, that we are vulnerable to sunburn, and that repeated sunburns would create like visible damage on the skin. So despite the negative press that links sun exposure to skin cancer, there really, when we look at it, there's a lack of consistent evidence to really support this theory or this prop, you know, this media blitz. People with the greatest risk of melanoma are actually not those with the greatest amount of solar time, because the studies on malignant melanoma show that it's less likely for adults and children who work and play outside, that it's far more common for people who work indoors, and that lesions also develop on areas of the skin that were never ever exposed to sunlight.
Yep.
And it's less likely to occur for people that live closer to the equator. And in 1986, Australian studies showed that there was actually no correlation between sun exposure and melanoma, and that risk for melanoma actually decreased about 25 to 40% with increased recreational sun exposure. So it's like the opposite of what we're being told. And again, if we think of cancers as sort of fungal, you know, that's where I feel like there's an interesting correlation there too, because again, the melanoma is not in sunlit exposure areas, and it does creep like on the skin. It spreads kind of like fungal. There's a lot of correlations like between cancer and fungus. Yeah. Yes. A not happy mycelia. So one of my favorite books, it's really hard to get. And last time I checked on used book sites, it was like $900 to buy, but keep your eye out. But it's called The Sun and the Epidemic of Melanoma, Myth on Myth, written by Dr. Ackerman. And he died a few years ago at an older age. But he was the founding father in a field called dermatopathology, which is, you know, more serious than dermatology, and it's like it's the derma pathology. Okay. So about, you know, the diseases on the skin. And he substantiated that there's no proof whatsoever that sun exposure causes melanoma, and he was like a very tanned, you know, doctor. And another really good study that was in The Lancet demonstrated that fluorescent light exposure from indoor work creates twice the incidence of melanoma than outdoor work.
Oh my God,
and that office workers exposed to high levels of artificial lighting. And that's back in 1982. So if you think about that, now we have the entire workforce pretty much working at the glare of a computer all day. In 1982, you know, think about how much less exposure we had to artificial light. And that those people have the highest risk of developing melanomas and cell mutations. If we have an epidemic lack of vitamin D, and that's linked to cancer, then we have these studies confirming that appropriate sun exposure prevents skin cancer. You know, so I feel like that's the statistics that are really interesting, and that melanoma decreases with sun exposure and increases with sunscreen use. So we can go into sunscreen now, because what the statistics show is that the increased use of sunscreen is increasing the rates of skin cancer.
So that's substantiated?
Yeah, that's been substantiated. I think I have some studies listed here. Well, a 2007 study at the University of California reviewed 17 studies of sunscreen use in melanoma. So a study that's reviewing studies, and they concluded that there is a significant correlation between sunscreen use and skin cancer. And way back in 1998, the Journal of the National Cancer Institute reported that children who were frequent users of sunscreens had a significantly higher chance of developing moles and freckles.
It's like, so if I put this toxic chemical onto the surface of my skin and then I cook it there in the sunlight, that's bad?
I always think of the difference between, like, you know, cooking with spray on Pam or cooking with like coconut oil.
Right. All right. So that actually brings me to that. So let's say, okay, we get it. We need more sun exposure. We're not going to use these things. What do you like to do? What do you recommend to people when they go out in the sun? I personally find that any of the oils that I put on my skin seem to have beautiful interactions with the sun. I'm kind of wearing coconut oil basically every day or something similar to it, find that it gives it me a great base tan. But just curious your thoughts on that and what you recommend people wear out in the sun.
The plants are the answer usually to most things. It's I love our relationship with the plants, and they can do so many beneficial things for our body. I began experimenting with plants and the essential oils on which ones I wanted to create with back when I was about 25, and I would go to the desert, like Arizona, California, in like July, and then experiment with like the different oils, like jojoba, myrrh, frankincense. In seeing about how they were working with the skin. And so from that, I made Everybody Loves the Sunshine, which is plant oils. And I call that more of like a sun harmonizer. Mm-hmm. So it could extend your time in the sun if you're very pale. It could just allow you to be in the sun for 10 minutes more in the beginning. For somebody like me, it might, you know, extend my time in the sun or just make it wait, or I always be in the sun with oil. It just makes it juicier, get a good golden tan, and it's also good for after sun exposure or if you did get too much. So there's just this harmonizer one. You know, people still want to know about the SPF, and again, that's not, we can't use that for things that aren't, that's only for synthetics. And then for blocking, we do the same formula, but
it reminds me of how many calories are in that. It's like, I don't care anymore. I don't know or care. Sorry, go ahead.
So then zinc is your go-to for, I want to be surfing for 8 hours and I'm not wearing a hat because I'm surfing and I need to protect my nose. So, you know, it is handy to have that. And why zinc works is that it actually reflects the sun's rays, so it sends them back out and not into your body, and so it's like a reflection. That's that classic, you know, why the lifeguards would wear that. So we take the same formula and add zinc, and again, you need to look for formulas that are non-nanoized zinc and that aren't a coated zinc oxide. Ooh. Just to get the least amount of, you know, zinc is natural, but it's still not something
we want to be absorbing.
I want
tons
to be using a lot and like slathering all over my body. So it's for, you know, then I'll use it in small areas. Well, I actually don't even use it, but if I was surfing, I would use it. But other than that, I'm going to be like looking at clothes or hats to, you know, easily take care of the rest. But back to the exciting plants. If we think about the plants, they're also interacting with the sun. And if you think about the miracle of flowers capturing sunlight from a star that's 8 light years away, swirling those photons together with water and carbon dioxide, and then you get a pattern of cells that creates a fragrant, colorful blossom. Like, that's so amazing. And so I often like to take pictures of flowers with the sun in the same photo because I find their relationship, and you get the yearning of the petals to be like stretched out to that element of the sun. And Victor Schauberger always talking about this seminal, you know, the seminal sun, like, which is like this sort of masculine metaphor interacting with the earth. Again, it's all in relationship.
Yeah, I think when you study the sun long enough, it's like, oh, the sun and the earth are having sex.
Yeah, exactly.
And we're the children of that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, that's
really
cool.
We're the love child.
Yeah, exactly. Children of the sun.
And so what's cool about the plant oils is that they're all offering a degree of ultraviolet protection to their own tissue. And of course, they can lend that, you know, property to us. And so things like virgin coconut oil, jojoba, olive, sea buckthorn, those are really good and really adept at harmonizing the sun's rays with our skin. Neat study showing that the raw raspberry seed oil, which we have in the Everybody Loves the Sunshine, is a broad spectrum sun protectant, almost thinking like some people have related it to having an equivalent of an SPF 25. But again,
can't say that.
Don't be your redheaded Irish person and putting red raspberry seed on and being in the sun all day. You will get a burn.
Right.
So what it shows is that the red raspberry seed oil might absorb the UVB and UVC, but scatters the UVA. So they're thinking that's how it works.
Oh, okay.
And then what's really cool about essential oils is that, and they're the distillates of plants. They're not the fatty, cold pressed fat from a plant. And they are really rich in antibiotics. They're also really good cell regenerators. And so things like sandalwood and frankincense, geranium immortelle, they've all shown to fade hyperpigmentation and prevent abnormal cell growth. And there's actually scientific studies that show, for example, there's ones on frankincense and geranium, but it shows like for sandalwood. And again, every oil will have about, you know, well, all we know so far in 10 years, this could change, but they have about like 1,000 biochemical components. So one drop of sandalwood oil has 1,000 chemicals in there, like natural chemicals. And so the alpha xanthol and beta xanthol, which are just the plant, you know, these names inside the sandalwood oil, they're chemo preventative. And it shows that the essential oils are able to prevent cells from going down a malevolent pathway, like when cells want to go abnormal. It prevents that.
Aw, like little guidance counselors.
They're like, back this way. Yeah. Go this way.
You're heading down a dark path, cell. Follow me.
Yeah, let's come back.
So this is sort of, some of your products are like this already, where there's a main kind of oil, and then there's a complement of essential oils that are in that oil. This is the way that we could start to, because obviously if we take a little bottle of essential oil and we put a drop, but we can't cover our skin in that. We need to put that into a carrier oil of some kind first so that we could
Putting frankincense on your body and lying in the sun. you want to just put in a little, some essential oils are photosensitizing. So if you took just lime or lemon oil and put it right on your skin no carrier oil, you'd actually get like a type of pigmentation. Mm-hmm. And it's okay, like if you have grapefruit in your jojoba oil, because it's a certain percentage that will make that photosensitivity occur. Okay. And I can't remember the exact number right now, but it'd probably be higher than 10%, which is probably not going to be what you're doing. But the oils that aren't sensitizing, they are so good for, you know, tending to burns and just really healing the skin. But what I also really like to get across is for people, because again, we have to just undo some thought forms, is that it's actually easier on our DNA to process the cell damage from being in the sun than to process having sunscreen on our skin.
Oh, that's really well said. Thank you. That's really well said.
Yeah. So I'll just repeat it. Like, if you got a sunburn, just tell yourself, that's okay. That was better than being in the sun with sunscreen. And it's easier for my body to deal with.
Right. And I've got...
And how... Yeah.
Well, you've also got... Go well, you've got 3.5 million years of hominid evolution behind healing the sunburn versus, like, you know, the last couple decades of dealing with these sunscreens, you know.
Totally. And so when we get sunburned, our ancient photoprotective melanin ensures that only a tiny fraction of our DNA is damaged by the absorbed photons. So the DNA can transform more than 99.9% of the photons into harmless heat. So again, the DNA will transform 99.9% of the photons into harmless heat. And that remaining 0.1% of the photons that causes the sunburn, you know, that's what's left. And so that conversion of photons into harmless heat is, of course, extremely efficient because our bodies are designed that way. But sunscreen damages the DNA indirectly and without a warning signal of a burn. And it's the indirect DNA damage that is responsible for the mutations.
So this is my like summary of our conversation. Rewild your sun exposure and do it slowly and responsibly. But I think it's like, I mean, it's amazing because all of, you know, you've filled in for us with such rich detail, and yet most people don't need to hold much of that information, right? It's like, get the sun exposure and do it in a way that's like safe and sane and healthy, of course, and learn your skin type and learn what amount of sun is appropriate for you. But I also want to point out, and I'm sure you've had this experience with a lot of different health practices, once you anchor it in, you don't need to kind of count the calories anymore, right? So it's like,
exactly.
You get a feel for how much sun is appropriate. You don't always have to be tracking this stuff or... You know, that's helpful in the beginning, but that's the crutch or the training wheels that gets us to the place where we learn how to hear our body's signals and how to trust our intuition and how to safely interact with our environment, you know, with our feeling instead of so much with our thinking. And I think that that's another important takeaway. So, okay, and I'm going to link...
Very well said.
Thank you. And you've brought so many cool things to the table. We're going to give links to the song you talked about, to the article you talked about, of course, to your website and such. I do want to encourage people. I know before the show, you and I were chatting, and you were sort of saying, "Oh, you know, I don't need to plug anything, and I want to plug your stuff because I love it so much. And up here in Quebec, where I am, we actually have somebody coming from your team next week to talk about products here to a small community of us, which I think is awesome. But just let people know where they can get a hold of your products, and you know, anywhere you'd like to send people aside from the links that we're going to give.
Well, our site is livinglibations.com, and it's like just a whole wonderland of nourishing goodness for your
literally
skin and
it's like
body.
It's like playing Candyland but as an adult going to your website.
Perfect. Yeah, and we'll hook up the articles, like, so Interacting Wisely with the Sun, we've got we'll do the hyperpigmentation article. You can see that. But again, I really like how you said, like, I like to go in deep with the details because we have to undo some things,
right?
But really, you can just so that you're like, so again, it's not just this empty, like, yeah, this sounds good for
yeah,
you.
So we need to be sold.
Deep.
Like,
yeah,
exactly.
And yeah, and then just forget about it and enjoy the sun. Mm-hmm. Like, really relax. Like, I think we can all just relax now. Mm. And really relax about your kids because they really, really need it.
That's so true. Oh, I just am picturing these kids I've seen with their moms chasing them around the soccer field, spraying them down, like, with stuff, like, looking like you said, like spraying Pam on the pan, you know. All right, so Nadine.
Yeah.
Thank
oh
you.
My God, and we didn't even like think about just for 1 minute. Sunscreen, chlorine pools. That's what we need to be protecting against.
Yeah, like that's what we need to be protecting our kids from, right?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so you are obviously a sun goddess. I appreciate you so much. Thank you for bringing all of this research. Thank you for bringing all this information, but also like so much inspiration. And then on top of it, so you, I got to tell you, Nadine, just from me to you, like you are one of the rare few in the world that I know that are so well-rounded as a person. You got it all. You're amazing. You're amazing.
Oh, you're so sweet.
Oh, yeah. It's true.
Blushing over here.
A deserved compliment. Well, thank you so much. And I would love to have you back on soon so we can kind of keep going with this discussion and some of the other discussions we've talked about having. I know people are going to love the show. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for all you're doing.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to the show. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe to the show on iTunes, and if you would, leave a rating and a review. That's really going to help us get this message out to more people, and it's going to help us know what you really like and what you don't like, and help us really tailor this show to your needs and to what you want to hear. Please stay connected with me at danielvitalis.com and sign up for my newsletter and my magazine, Rewild Yourself, and you can subscribe to both of those right there on danielvitalis.com. Got lots of really great shows lined up, and I'm going to keep bringing you more great information. And until then, keep rewilding yourself. Show me.